You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a new episode and a new week of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Sunday afternoon, the 40-point scoring streak for James Harden, and more importantly, the 6-game winning streak for the Rockets are both finally over. Harden had only, I'm saying this with air quotes of course, 38 points and 7 assists on Saturday night in Portland, a game the Rockets lost 110-101 to fall to 22-16 on the season. Yusuf Nurkic had 25 points and 15 rebounds to lead the Blazers, who improved to 23-17 with the win. For Houston, it's only the second loss in the last 13 games, and even with this loss, they still remain tied for fourth in the Western Conference standings, which puts them in position to have home court advantage in at least the first round of the postseason, should the season end today. Fortunately for the Rockets, who are very hot even with the loss, having won 11-13, the season does not end today, and there are going to be opportunities to move up even more in the days ahead. That's because Denver, which currently sits at number one in the Western Conference standings, comes to Houston on Monday night, which certainly gives the Rockets an opportunity to gain even more ground in the days ahead, especially against a Nuggets team that traditionally the Rockets in the James Harden era match up very well with, the Rockets having won 8 consecutive games against the Nuggets over the past few seasons. So to discuss what went wrong in Saturday's defeat, what's on tap for the homestand ahead this week, the Rockets have 9 of their next 12 games at home, and also the potential for roster moves in the weeks and even days ahead, January 7th, that's Monday, could be an important date for the Rockets. More on that in just a bit. To dissect all of those things, I've got an old friend coming on the show today to break down those angles. In fact, he was actually the very first guest we ever had on the inaugural Locked On Rockets way back in July 2016. That guest, of course, is David Wiener, Rockets fan and resident salary cap guru on Twitter, where you probably know him as @BeamAThug. He also writes for the Rockets blog Clutch Fans over at clutchfans.net. So without any further delay, let's get straight to the phone lines. David, how are you, my friend?
Doing great, Ben. How's it going?
Pretty well. Glad to hear you're doing great. I'm assuming yesterday was not an ideal day at the Wiener household. For any of our listeners who do not already know from following him on Twitter, @BeamAThug, David is, of course, a diehard Texans and Rockets fan. His wife, Stacy, is a Cowboys fan. So with the Texans and Rockets losing yesterday, the Texans in the playoffs, the Cowboys winning, I'm assuming that was a bit of a rough day?
Happy wife, happy life. That's all I have to say.
There you go. And, of course, we're talking Rockets, so it's slightly less unhappy relative to the Texans because, of course, it's just one regular season game. And, David, as far as regular season losses go, I know when you start 11-14, any loss is a big deal, and now they've lost the tiebreaker to Portland, who conceivably they could be fighting for playoff seeding with. But I don't really feel that down about this loss. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but to me, the way you look at it, this was sort of a schedule loss. I know it wasn't a back-to-back for Houston. It actually was for Portland, although both were at home. But the Rockets, no Chris Paul, no Eric Gordon. It's been basically a gauntlet the last 2 weeks with scheduling. And then you have the overtime game in Golden State, both the emotional and the kind of physical toll that comes with that. And Harden was 3-for-15 in the first half. That's what led to them being down by 13 at the break. They cut it to 5 a couple of times, but couldn't quite scale the mountain. There were some annoying things. You'd like to see them rebound better. Again, Harden had the poor first half, but they kept fighting back. Ultimately, I don't feel that bad about that loss, especially with the spirit they showed fighting back. Just curious if you saw it the same way.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly would like to get as many wins as you can against other Western Conference playoff contenders, but you know, I think riding the high of winning in Golden State, I think emotionally I was more prepared to deal with the loss there. I think that, if anything, the Portland matchup emphasized some of this roster shortcomings with or without Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, and that's, you know, defensive rebounding. And a team like Portland with just a behemoth like Yusuf Nurkic, was able to exploit the weakness. You have Clint Capela and then really not much anything else. And a team like that's going to give you trouble unless you can be extremely explosive on the other end. And we just didn't have the guns to get it done in that game.
When you look at the rebounding issues, what's different relative to a year ago? Because, of course, I know every discussion before this recent uptick in which they won 11 of 13, everybody says, well, there's no Ariza and Bamute. And I suppose with Ariza in particular, there is a little bit of above-average rebounding for his position. But last year, Capela was enough, or I shouldn't say Capela by himself, but he had enough help to where it wasn't the liability that it is this year. What's different with the roster composition? Are they not getting enough help from the backcourt? Is it the bench? Just curious what you see that's different this year on the glass than a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really crunched the numbers on the team rebounding, but, you know, just aesthetically, it just seems that when you don't have as many smart rebounder or smart defenders like Ariza and Bamute, who not only can defend their guy but also box out, which is, you know, anyone that follows me on Twitter knows that I'm a big advocate of boxing out. It drives me crazy when teams don't box out. And I think the Rockets, other than, you know, P.J. Tucker, tend to not do a very good job boxing out. And, you know, it's those little things that even on the, you know, perimeter defenders can do to keep bodies off the glass. And, you know, especially when, that's one thing. And the other thing is, you know, if, you know, offensive perimeter players are getting by their man, Clint's going to have to leave his guy to come help, and then you have no one to box out. You need to have a smart defender to slide over to box out the big,
sure.
And sometimes that's P.J. Tucker, but a lot of times that's nobody.
Good point. With Harden, the first half was clearly what went wrong for him on Saturday. I think 3 of 15, 5 turnovers. What are the narratives that I'm starting to see for him? And, of course, he's been stupendous. He's been ridiculous in this recent stretch, averaging, I think, more than 40 a game in his last 13, had only 38 last night. But you're starting to see a lot of fixation over the three-point attempts. Last night, 17 of 35 from behind the arc. Do you buy that the fact that he's taking fewer shots than ever at the rim? I looked up today. His percentage is one of the lowest in his time in Houston of shots near the rim. Is that at all related to the workload? Maybe he doesn't have the springs, especially in this stretch where he's asked to do so much without CP3 and Eric Gordon? Or do you think that it's just a reflection of the fact that his three-pointer has gotten so much better, his technique, you know, what he's making percentage-wise on the pull-ups, even going to his right, like the game-winner against Golden State? I guess my question for you, with Harden taking this many threes, is it just a product of the natural evolution of him as a shooter, or is there possibly a burden component to it that maybe, at least during the regular season, he doesn't want to put his body through the mileage that comes with attacking the paint like he has in the past?
I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I think the you know, your first point that you touched on, my guess is probably the most significant, is that the CP3 not being out there very much so far this season. I think, and then when he's been out there, just not being as effective as the Chris Paul that we saw even last year. My guess is that if we get a healthy Chris Paul back and he takes on more of the ball handling responsibilities, you'll see some more off-ball Harden. You might see some Harden cuts. You might also see Harden with the ball in his hands, with defenders having to be more honest with their man, because, you know, Chris Paul's also a really good three-point shooter, and guys don't want to leave him too wide open. You know, same could be said with Eric Gordon. His three-point shot's been off all the year. If you get a healthy, you know, free-stroking Eric Gordon, you have a lot more room to operate. This could also be one of those examples where having Ryan Anderson would be helpful, where you had a guy standing 5 feet behind the three-point line whose man couldn't leave him. You know, those types of, you know, roster situations created a lot of space for Harden to work, and I don't see quite the amount of space for him to operate there without all these guys on the floor. But my guess is when Chris Paul comes back, you'll probably see some more of Harden going to the rim. I think he's going to have more opportunities and more space.
I want to turn our focus to something more short-term. Monday's a big day for the Rockets because they're playing Denver, currently number one in the Western Conference. It'd be a big win if they can get it. Looks like they'll be without Eric Gordon, on top of already being without Chris Paul. That's obvious. Eric Gordon at the moment listed as out as well. Seems like Wednesday against Milwaukee is the earliest that he could come back. But there's another reason why Monday, January 7th is potentially a big deal for the Rockets, and it's something that you, David, have been discussing on your Twitter timeline at BeamAthug for a few days, and even months for that matter, because January 17th is the deadline for non-guaranteed contracts to be waived, correct?
Yeah, players need to be waived by the end of the day on January 7th in order for them to clear waivers in time. January 10th is the guarantee date.
Okay.
And because players need to be on waivers for a full 48 hours, they have to be waived before the end of the day on the 7th in order to be cleared before they guarantee. So
yeah,
you're going to be seeing a lot of moves. I think we've already started seeing some in the minutes leading up to the recording of this podcast, where teams are going to start waiving guys on non-guaranteed contracts in order to avoid having to pay the full salaries for the year. And where that really affects the Rockets is with Michael Carter-Williams. The Rockets signed him early in free agency to a league minimum contract, and I think one of the reasons why they agreed to sign him so early, as opposed to kind of waiting out the market and maybe finding someone a little bit better, is that Michael Carter-Williams agreed that he would only partially guarantee his salary. About $1.2 million of his salary is guaranteed. So as long as they waive him by the end of the day, Monday, January 7th, the most they would have to pay him is $1.2 million, and they don't suffer the full cap hit, and more importantly, the full luxury tax hit that they would have to do if he was on the roster beyond the 7th.
And the clear incentive for the Rockets, beyond just the money, is that they're running out of days on the Daniel House Jr. two-way, correct? Because when they signed him that two-way in December, as I understood it from talking to you, it's prorated. So it's not the usual 45 days. It's, what, about 30, I think you said? So really, sometime in mid-January, they're going to have to clear up a roster spot, be it either Michael Carter-Williams or Carmelo Anthony, to keep Daniel House long-term. And clearly, he's a fixture here now. I think we can agree about that. It's just a matter of how rather than if.
Yeah, I believe based on the date that he signed his two-way, the prorated number of NBA service days he's allowed was 32, which, again, how NBA service days are counted tends to be a little bit murky, and teams don't publicly provide that information, so it's hard to exactly track those. But I believe House's NBA days of services are going to end extremely soon, maybe as early as tomorrow or two or Monday or Tuesday. So my guess is there was a lot of thought given to those days expiring right around the guarantee date. So I think the Rockets have planned for the situation, and I would be shocked if worst case scenario, they at least convert House to an NBA contract for this season and he becomes a restricted free agent this summer. My guess is they will seek to sign him to a three-year deal using a sliver of their mid-level, which is the same thing they did with Isaiah Hartenstein and more recently with Gary Clark.
Yeah. Assuming, of course, that House is taken care of, and I think that's a pretty safe assumption. The other thing I want to ask you about, because we're getting closer to the trade deadline, you mentioned the wave of non-guaranteeds that could become available or other situations. There's now, in the minutes leading up to this recording, Pat McCaw becoming available, guard formerly out of Golden State, Chandler Parsons, of course, former Rocket. That's not a non-guarantee. That's just a situation somewhat similar, not with salary, but in regards to planning a mutual separation, somewhat like Carmelo Anthony here in Houston. The fit just, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to be there. As we get closer to the deadline and the buyout market, and I would say this kind of is the start of the buyout market because this is when you could start to see other options shake free. Just curious what you're looking at for this Rockets team because, you know, you mentioned the rebounding earlier, and clearly for the season, that's the main issue, but it's kind of a weird thing because it's not like that you just need a traditional big. The reason the Rockets struggle on the glass relative to last year, it's not so much that the pieces are that different. It ties into some of these other issues, and I like what you said earlier about the lack of awareness with some of the wing defenders, that kind of thing. And, you know, all year long, I know you've been a fan not just of the 3-and-D types, but also the fourth guard. Well, I'm thinking the fourth guard has been solved at this point through adding Austin Rivers. And then Brandon Knight, the last couple of games, has shown some signs, hit three shots in Portland, also had a big three-pointer in the fourth quarter against Golden State on Thursday. So, in your eyes, is the fourth guard, now that you have both Austin Rivers and Brandon Knight playing better, is that off the table? Are you still open to that? Or are you still predominantly looking at the 3-and-D types as some of these guys potentially shake free?
Oh, I definitely think the guard situation is well taken care of for this year. I think with Harden, Paul, Gordon, and Rivers, that's as solid a guard rotation as you're going to find in the NBA. So I think they're very solid there. And like you said, I've been encouraged by the last couple of games out of Brandon Knight. Even if you suffer an injury, I think Knight, the way he's progressing, hopefully by March and April, he's given you, even more solid play than he has the last couple of nights, and he can step in a bind and help you out as kind of a replacement guard. So I'm not really looking at guards. And speaking of guards, I meant to mention this on the Michael Carter-Williams front, that I think a trade you may see most immediately, the Rockets may look to trade Carter-Williams. And by the time people are listening to this podcast, this may have already happened. But rather than waiving Carter-Williams and eating a $1.2 million cap hit, which is going to probably cost the team, when you count luxury taxes, closer to $4 or $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
I could see them trading him tomorrow or in the next few hours, plus some cash to cover the rest of his salary, and then profit to the other team just to clear his cap hit off the book. So if I were to predict any particular trade, it would be the Rockets trading Michael Carter-Williams in cash, but that would happen very, very soon. But getting back to your question on the court fits, I think I'd be looking for more of a combo forward, someone to spell P.J. Tucker. Because I really think even at the three position, between going small with Gordon Harden at the three, you got House, you got Gerald Green has been playing pretty well lately. And James Ennis, who I seem to be more higher on him than most people. I think he's been slightly disappointing from what I was expecting from him going into the season. But I think a healthy James Ennis gives you another solid option at the three. I'd be looking more for a 3-4, maybe even a 4-5, because P.J. Tucker is just playing way too many minutes for a guy like him. I'm looking for a guy who plays solid D, can guard any of the front court positions, can box out and get a rebound and possibly hit a three. But I don't even necessarily need a really high percentage three-point shooter. I think they need another guy who can play the power forward position, but that's just me.
Let me ask you a little more about Brandon Knight. We discussed him earlier, and one of my pet peeves on Rockets Twitter, I think there's some folks that can't see the forest for the trees with that contract. If you can move him and get an upgrade, then sure, you do it. I'm completely on board with that. If it makes you a better basketball team every year with James Harden in his prime or whatever is left of Chris Paul's prime, you've got to go for it. That said, if he starts showing some signs in the last two games he has, to me, I don't see the Rockets having a huge sense of urgency to move him. Now, if it's the right deal, sure. But this summer, potentially, as I see it, and correct me if I'm wrong, that contract is useful. It's not going to become a positive asset by any means, but a $15 million expiring salary that's unessential to your rotation that you can use to match deals in June or July with any free agents or trade candidates on the market, that's useful. So that's why I've been saying for weeks, I can't see the Rockets making a move for, say, a J.R. Smith type with the Brandon Knight contract, and there are other guys that can fit in there as well. But between him showing some signs on the court and the fact that expiring salary is useful this summer, I don't see the Rockets looking to move him just to move him. Is that a fair characterization?
I couldn't agree more with you, Ben. I think you hit the nail on the head there. Those that want to get him off the roster because they see high salary, bad contract with underperforming player need to realize that there's a bigger game at play here. And if you want the Rockets to be able to make a significant trade for a guy on a significant contract, but you don't want to trade James Harden, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, or Eric Gordon, you need salary filler. And Brandon Knight represents that salary filler. I also agree that the likelihood of a big trade this year is unlikely, in my opinion. Number one, I actually like the roster. I think they could tweak it a little bit better. Again, I think they need to maybe find a higher quality backup power forward. But other than that, I actually like this roster at full strength. The problem with trying to do a Brandon Knight trade this year is even if you're trading for another guy, maybe, you know, that Kent Bazemore, someone who is overpaid but a better player, you are going to have to give up significant draft assets to move Brandon Knight's contract this year. Like you said, Ben, next year when he isn't expiring, again, will not be a positive asset, but he will be a less negative asset and one that at least gives you the ability and the flexibility to make all sorts of larger trades without having to give up as significant of the draft assets to move that contract. And I think it behooves the Rockets for the long term, if they want to make a significant move, most likely for next season, to hang on to that Brandon Knight contract. Even if he stinks from here on out, just holding on to that contract is beneficial. Now, hopefully Brandon Knight, the player, is going to give you some level of productivity where he's playable and he's a end-of-rotation guy. But even if he isn't, that contract is of use to the Rockets beyond this season, and I expect that they will probably use it after this season.
Yeah, and even if, as you said, you could theoretically move him along with, you know, a future first or two for Kent Bazemore or Courtney Lee, someone along those lines, the problem with those deals is that, okay, if you want to use that salary down the road for a bigger deal, like we were saying this summer or sometime next season, then you'd be depleting your war chest of future first-round picks, and as evidenced by the Jimmy Butler pursuit, I'm assuming that's your most prized asset to actually make a deal get to the finish line. So that's why, to me, you know, if you do a deal for Kent Bazemore, you have to really, really like him, because to move that Knight contract now, you'd be depleting your future assets. That's how I look at it.
Right, and I think, you know, funny enough, I think the emergence of Daniel House, who I think both in playing style and body type is a very similar player to Kent Bazemore, maybe, you know, mitigates the need for a guy like Bazemore who, you know, if he were 2 or 3 inches taller, I think would be perfect. But, you know, he's basically a shooting guard who has been pushed into small forward duty. And I think the Rockets are sufficiently laden with guys who play that position that they don't have to, you know, it'd be great. Bazemore would certainly be an upgrade, but I don't think he's a significant enough upgrade to give up the draft assets that Atlanta would require.
You mentioned the name Daniel House as certainly a help for the Rockets right now, but also making a big difference in terms of their approach to the trade deadline, because he makes the need for a true 3-and-D type like a Kent Bazemore a little bit less. I'm curious what you think Mike D'Antoni does when everyone gets healthy. And I think with Chris Paul in the hamstring, we're probably at least a week away, maybe more than that. They're going to be ultra-conservative. But we know that before James Ennis got hurt the second time with the hamstring, they did make the move to Eric Gordon starting at the three. To me, it was less about the Rockets knew that was the lineup and more that was after 0-3 road trip. They were looking for any kind of a spark, and that's the only really internal card they had left to play. But now that Daniel House is playing so well, once you get Chris Paul back, and we all know he's going to start, and Eric Gordon presumably returns fairly soon as well from that bruised knee, do you think they stay with Eric Gordon as the three, which they've made the decision before the first Ennis injury? Or has House given them a lot of real consideration that he could be the starting three even when everybody's healthy, and then you go back to Eric Gordon as the sixth man, which was the case for, obviously, the majority of his first two-plus seasons in Houston?
It's a really interesting question. On the one hand, I would probably stick with House. I think Eric Gordon is such a spark off the bench. If he's playing up to the caliber that he normally plays at, as opposed to his underperformance so far this season, I just love having a big gun coming off the bench, and Gordon's, you know, as good as it gets coming off the bench in the NBA. So I personally would stick with House. I think the Rockets would have ideally liked to have stuck with Ennis longer, but it just something wasn't working with that group. And Ennis was just the odd man out. You know, I tend to like a lower on the totem pole offensive option who can play perimeter defense as that fifth starter, and then have the better player coming off the bench. So if House is kind of getting it done where Ennis didn't, I would probably start House, bring Gordon off the bench, still play Ennis as well. On the flip side of that, the signing of Austin Rivers has given the Rockets another bench scorer that they didn't really have before. And so if for those arguing in favor of Gordon starting and going with the three guard lineup, you do have Rivers right there as a good spark off the bench. So they really could go either way. I'd probably stick with House and just have kind of dual dynamos of Gordon and Rivers, kind of similar to when they had Gordon and Lou Williams coming off the bench.
Yeah,
but that's just me.
That's a good comparison. On the Rivers front, I've had some folks asking me already, because he's on a one-year deal, how can you keep him beyond this season? And, of course, that's premature. We're talking about a small sample size, but he's definitely been a revelation. Saturday night, even when the Rockets finally lost a game, he was a standout, 21 points, 8 of 15 shooting, made 5 of his 10 threes. He's a good creator, a good on-ball defender. He's been everything they possibly could have hoped for. That's the good news, and you've got him for the rest of this year. The bad news, and I'll let you explain it because you're our resident capologist, as I understand it, it's going to be pretty difficult for them to retain him this summer. Not impossible, but as I read it, it's pretty similar to Luke Bamute a year ago in that because he's a one-year minimum deal, you have no bird rights, and of course the Rockets are not only above the cap, they're in luxury tax territory. So really, the only way, even if Rivers pans out, to keep him would be to give him your mid-level exception, and if he plays this well, even that might not be enough, considering he's just 26 years old. So as I read it, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm very bullish on Austin Rivers now, but as far as beyond this season, it seems like a long shot, if he continues to play this well, that there's an avenue to keep him.
Yeah, pretty much that's correct. I think most likely, if he plays the way he's been playing his first few games for the Rockets, and he does that for the rest of the season and in the playoffs, he very well might price himself out of the Rockets market. The most that the Rockets can offer him is the taxpayer mid-level exception, which next year, depending on how much the cap goes up, is going to be $5 or $6 million. So we're looking at a 3-year contract. So figure 3 years, 18, 19 million, something like that, is the most that they could give him. It is possible. He seems to really like it here. Obviously, playing in Mike D'Antoni's offense is players love doing that. So there, and the Texas is a no state income tax state. So when you put those factors in, he might be willing to re-sign for less. There's also a less likely option. They would have non-bird rights to him, which means they could re-sign him for up to 120% of the veteran's minimum, which I can't remember exactly how many years of service Rivers has, but figure around $3 million or so. Mm-hmm. My guess is he will not take that. You probably need to use the full mid-level on him, which then means you may not be able to bring back James Ennis. If he plays up to his capabilities, he has a player option for the league minimum next year, which I would expect him to decline unless he really underperforms. So I had kind of gone into this season thinking the Rockets might have to use their mid-level next year on James Ennis. But if Rivers is willing to take that, you might end up losing Ennis. Obviously, you lose the opportunity to sign another, you know, kind of third-tier free agent with the mid-level. But my guess is you're not going to find someone better than the Austin Rivers over the last six games in free agency for the mid-level. So, especially with so many teams expected to have cap room this summer. So bottom line, you probably hope that Rivers takes the MLE, and you're probably going to lose out on some of the better free agents by doing that.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Folks, he's David Wiener. Follow him on Twitter at BeamAthug, and you can read his writing occasionally at clutchfans.net, the blog ran by Dave Hardesty covering the Rockets. David, thanks so much for the time, buddy.
My pleasure, Ben.
Good stuff there from David Wiener. Thanks to him for joining us. And as always, thanks to you guys for listening, because this is where we'll break it for today's show on Sunday, January 6th. If you want any more content before our next episode, the best place to get it, real-time analysis that is of course on Twitter. David is on there at BeamAthug, B-I-M-A-T-H-U-G. As he said, he's actually the furthest thing from a thug, which is very true. I'm on there at Ben DuBose, simply my name, and also the show handle is Locked On Rockets. Also, don't forget Locked On NBA Net. That's the Twitter and Instagram handle for our national network of NBA reporters here at the Locked On Podcast Network. So if you'd follow those on Instagram and or Twitter, then you can get feeds from people just like myself and in all other cities around the NBA if you want some insight on their teams, or especially if you want to see what they're saying about the Rockets. For example, there's great hosts in Denver and Milwaukee, the two teams that right now lead the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference in the NBA, and just happen to be the next two teams on the docket for the Rockets at Toyota Center when they begin a three-game homestand starting tomorrow night. So, until that game, this is where we will leave off. As always, again, thanks so much for listening. If you want more content before the next episode, well, of course, as I said, you can find that on Twitter where there's real-time analysis. But if you want to check out our past shows, we've had a ton of content of late after the Warriors game. Had a great interview late last week with Hunter Atkins of the Houston Chronicle about the aforementioned Austin Rivers. So if you want more content, another great place to find it is in our archives. So LockedOnRockets.com, Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, both avenues which you can access our prior content or get a few extras as well. You get some great videos of the last shot and the radio call of that from the epic Rockets victory over the Warriors the other night. Also, if you're interested in reaching out to me or potentially inquiring about how to become a potential sponsor of this program and helping your business, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. That's a way you can hit me up and have a bit more freedom to ask questions than the 280 character limit on Twitter. Also, I mentioned the Locked On Podcast Network earlier in the context of the Locked On NBA Net Twitter and Instagram feeds. We also have reporters covering the NFL, even some Major League Baseball and college sports here in Houston. That includes the Houston Texans, who unfortunately were knocked out of the playoffs in their playoff opener Saturday. Brian Patterson, Robert Land, my friends, have you covered over at Locked On Texans. So iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you listen to Locked On Rockets, and hopefully subscribe. Also leave a 5-star review, hint, hint, so we can look attractive to potential advertisers. But you can make that happen with Locked On Texans as well. They've got some good content breaking down what went wrong for the Texans and what their offseason priorities are. So give them a listen as well. The same platforms that you can find Locked On Rockets. Also, as I've been saying a lot of late, we are working with voice assistant providers, the Alexas of the world, to make our content accessible there as well. So if you're driving, if you're working out, if there's somewhere that you are using your voice assistant, just say play podcast Locked On Rockets or play podcast Locked On Texans, and you should be able to find those shows there as well. The most recent episode should come up as soon as you say those words. So with the plugs complete, this is where we will sign off. Again, thanks as always to you guys, our loyal listeners, for listening. Thanks to David for joining us. And come back soon, really tomorrow, because Monday night we'll be recapping whatever happens. Rockets Nuggets, a big game in Houston, and potentially a trade on the Michael Carter-Williams front for the reasons that David laid out earlier. Whatever happens, though, we'll have it all covered right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.